And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors.
Hey everyone, this is Patrick with All Things Private Practice. I wanted to just give a huge shout out for The Receptionist for iPad. They've been a sponsor for this podcast for 4 years in a row, and I just want to say how grateful I am to their partnership and what they do for the not only therapist, but also medical community. Your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like billing or simply trying to make a cup of coffee between appointments or trying to use the bathroom, constant interruptions can derail your entire day. This episode and this year's podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist, a sign-in app company. The Receptionist for iPad is a HIPAA-ready digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients or patients can check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from the interruptions and make the most of your time, because it is valuable. Start a free 14-day trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up. Hey everyone, welcome back to the All Things Private Practice podcast. I didn't even ask you how to say your last name, and now I'm just realizing that.
Scarsa.
Okay, I would have said it that way. So I am joined today by Atsetta Scarsa, who is a licensed professional counselor, coach, and yoga teacher. She's originally from New York, lived in Colorado for 10 plus years, and has a master's in arts and clinical mental health counseling from Northwestern. Her neurodivergence, giftedness, ADHD, various life experiences, and unique worldview allows her to see people where they are authentically. You are a retreat host, enjoy traveling, living, and allowing people to give back to the communities that you're sharing space with. Her journey to understanding her needs and how to take care of herself included a holistic experience and approach of involving mental health, physical, and spiritual wellness, and also likes to balance evidence-based practices, spiritually aligned practices like yoga, psychedelic work, and intuitive practice. Mm-hmm. We were going to talk about integration today, and then you reached out and said, can we just talk about burnout? Mm-hmm. And specifically ADHD burnout, not workplace burnout. I want to make that clear distinction, and I'm totally, totally on board because that is where I am and have been. If you have been following my social media posts, you know that. I am definitely in the thick of it. So what made you, one, welcome to the show, and two,
thank you.
What made you want to talk about that specifically?
What a year it's been. Thank you.
What a year it's been.
Yeah.
Yes. What an understatement, I think, even.
Yeah. A true understatement. I mean, as I was having a breakdown last night, I was like, yeah, this is that burnout thing. And it's so funny because I've been convincing myself, like I've been coming in and out of it and been like, yeah, this isn't burnout. No. And then just a few times this week, even I've said, oh, I've hit my limit. Oh, yeah. Okay. This is the first time I felt it in this way. Like it's just been such a full year of a lot of very exciting things, which is wonderful. And I'm so tired. I'm exhausted. Yeah. And it's that push pull of the ADHD constantly seeking, wanting more and more and more. And the autistic side of me is just like, can you please, please give me a break? And that fight back and forth. So I was like, maybe we don't talk about integration. I mean, I think it might weave its way in because it's important and it's always around us, but the burnout felt very much at the forefront.
Yeah. Yeah, you said it perfectly. It is that constant like push-pull navigation. I talk about the like ADHD tug of war a lot. And I've been in probably major ADHD burnout for over a year. I actually noticed it last year going into, I was hosting a summit in Italy. And all I kept telling myself in my brain was like, get through Italy. And then the rest of the year is done. And you're going to go to New Zealand. You're going to go on this 2-week Lord of the Rings tour. You get to nerd out in your special interest the whole time. You get to relax. You don't have any more demands. That was like my brain telling myself, just push, push, push and get done. Mm. Then here in Western North Carolina, immediately after Italy, Hurricane Helene came and just devastated and destroyed most of the area. And I was, my wife kept saying, like, you should still go. And I'm like, there's no fucking way I'm leaving you in the midst of this. So, like, since that time, it always feels like I'm playing catch up, trying to, like, regenerate, restore, relax enough just to be okay to function for the day because of all the events that I host. And then the election. And then this year has felt like 20 years. And I'm still surprised we're in 2025.
How is it both? It feels like I can't believe we're still in 2025, and I can't believe that the year is almost over and we're heading into 2026 so soon. It's that. Yeah. It's very, very weird.
It is. Yeah. And I like that you named the excitement of, like, you have these good things going on, and then that's really the ADHD side, right? Of, like, we've got all these cool things to look forward to. Look how exciting this is. And then in turn, because of all the exciting things, the autistic side is, like, over there waving the white flag desperately saying, like, please don't put anything else on the calendar. I cannot do one more thing. And it is that constant, like, clashing over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And then what I notice is if I'm looking out far enough and something comes up and I'm like, oh, I'll probably be in a good enough space by then. It should be fine. And then we're talking about flying too, because obviously travel is a big part of what we do with retreats. Yep. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, in like 4 months, I'll have to fly and it'll be fine. And the autistic side is like, please, like, but it's like, oh, no, shh. Like, the ADHD is just so much louder and excitable and all of that. So,
I'm laughing because, like, Dr. Neff and I talk about this on the Divergent Conversations podcast all the time about you're almost like forgetting, because of the excitement and the romanticizing that the ADHD side does, you're forgetting the energy tax and toll that it takes to go through flying, traveling, experiencing, hosting, new environment, whatever, transitioning. And you're like, oh, but that's in 6 months and my calendar is clear, so it will be okay. But then the ADHD side also starts to put things into your calendar, like, ooh, I should do more podcasts. Ooh, I should do this. Ooh, I should say yes to this opportunity. This sounds really exciting. Mm-hmm. By the time you get to that 6 months, you're like, holy shit, I'm so worn down. I don't know if I can do this. And that it's that constant back and forth.
Mm-hmm. It's exhausting. And I think there's a level of feeling a lot of privilege that this is the life that I've built for myself, right? And I think that might be the autistic side and some of that justice piece that comes out, where it's like almost like there's not really space to complain. And it doesn't feel like complaining all the time. I do love to vent, though. I will say venting is a love language of mine. But there is a sense of maybe you really can't speak too much to how tired you are, because you're getting to go to all these beautiful places and enjoy this beautiful life. Like, just enjoy it more, right? There are people that can't do what you're doing.
Yeah. Be more present. Be more in the moment. Be more appreciative. Like, how lucky you are to go and do all these things that feel so extraordinarily amazing and just not the norm for our profession, where people are not often, you know, able to do these things or even attend the events that we host. And I think about that a lot. I actually had a breakdown. It was like 4 months after my second throat surgery, and my throat and my voice were really struggling. I didn't give myself enough time to recover, jump right back into retreat season. And I remember having this breakdown outside because, one, I couldn't speak loud enough to actually, like, participate in what was happening around me. That was really a struggle. I would have to ask my guests, like, hey, can you get everyone's attention? Hey, can you, like, help me out here? And that became a running joke for a while. But I was so overwhelmed sensory-wise, and I didn't know that was what was happening. It was right after my autism discovery, and I was just having, like, intense sensory shutdowns and meltdowns. Like, and I just went outside, and I just, like, scream at the top of my fucking lungs because I was like, I have created a dream job that I can't really participate in because I am so overwhelmed all the time. And I'm so impacted all of the time that it's so hard to be, like, present and appreciative of what's happening around you. and also feeling like unable to actually actively participate in it. And it was like, it was really a mind fuck because I was thinking like, maybe I just need to give this up completely.
Yeah, that feels like, well, thank you for naming all of that because I resonate in some ways and also just see you. Like, it is so hard to do such a cool job and have your body feel like it's not on board all the time. And that keep up with what your brain is wanting to do and give to people and experience to the full. That language too, and that like, oh, maybe I should just quit or maybe I should just be done with it all feels like the alarm bell of burnout that sometimes I don't even step into or recognize. It's like, oh yeah, if you're feeling like you don't want to do this anymore, but you know it's something you love, right? It gets clouded, and it just turns into, oh yeah, like maybe you're just not cut out for it.
And I think like the ADHD experience in a nutshell, exactly that, right? Of like, I'm excited about this. My mind is really going. It's so excited. It feels creative. It feels connected. And your body is just like breaking down and it's giving you signals. And sometimes it could be because of our own sometimes internalized ableism. It could be, I want to prove that I can do this. Like, I used to be able to do these things. Why can't I push through now? And if I listen to my body back in January 2023, which was at this New Orleans event, fast forward to present day, 15 retreats later, 15 countries later, end up in the hospital a month ago because of how broken down my body is from all the travel, all the hosting, getting sick constantly, being in burnout, pushing yourself beyond your limits and your capacity. And eventually your body gives out. And that's exactly what happened was I was hosting back-to-back retreats. I thought this was a good idea in theory at the beginning of the year in Greece and then flying directly to Spain to host another because of what I said was that will be the end of my work year. What's the point of going back to the States for a month, recovering and coming back? Just get them done, do them back-to-back. I never do that. Go through Greece, fly to Spain immediately. And I'm not even talking about a weekend, one day in, get sick. Think to myself, huh, I can fight this. Gets worse, gets worse, gets worse. I never even stepped foot at that Spain retreat with all of the guests who waited a year to come to it. Had to send a WhatsApp chat to everyone saying like, I'm sick. I need to go home. I'm sorry, but like, this is where I'm at and I need you to have the best experience possible. You're in good hands. And that took so much. That was so grief-filled. And so much of me was like fighting that urge to say like, no, you're going to push through and do this. I come home. I get super sick. Recover for a month. Go on my first vacation of the year with my wife to Spain. Get sick halfway through the trip. Get more sick on the plane ride home to the point where I thought, I feel like one of my organs is going to burst. Like, that's the pain that I'm in. This is really scary. Get back to the States, tell my wife, we need to go to the hospital in Atlanta. We drive 4 hours back to Asheville. I go to the ER. I'm there all night. I come back home with like two major infections. And it literally is your body saying like, you're done and you have to start listening to me or this is going to get so much worse. And I think for those of you listening, if you found yourself in these positions, you've got to listen to your body when you're feeling those red flags or those signs or those alarm bells are ringing because like, if I had, maybe I would not be in the position that I'm in. And right now it really is a relearning process for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're here 2 years later now from it.
Yep.
The original moment. Thank you for saying all that and naming the grief in it too. Because
I felt so much shame, you know, like being like, all of these guests have waited a year for this event. A lot of them signed up because of me and I'm not even going to go. I can't even like say hello. I can't even go to introductions. I can't even like participate. That felt so shitty. And thankfully we had my co-host and I had really good speakers lined up and they carried a lot of the weight and my co-host did an amazing job, but it was not an easy decision for me to change my flight and say that to the group. Like it really was very challenging.
Mm-hmm. That takes so much courage because again, you've had this I'll speak for myself too. This muscle is so overworked of just keep going, just keep pushing. And so to completely go against that because you have to, it doesn't even feel like it's a choice at that point. This is like, okay, this is what has to happen. And there's some grief in that too, because it feels like your autonomy is taken by your own choices, which is kind of fucking itself.
It really is. I'm a PDAer, so like pervasive drive for autonomy, for those of you listening, otherwise known as pathological demand avoidance. So anytime I get faced with that, like autonomy is being taken, I resist it at all costs. I'm like, no, I want to be able to do the things that I want to be able to do. And then it's been this way for so long. I try to trick the ADHD side all the time of like, we'll allow for like going into 2025. I made this deal with my therapist where she was like, we need some major changes need to happen. And I was like, yeah, I agree. In 2025, I will only do retreats in odd numbered months, and I will only say yes to opportunities in odd numbered months, and I will always give myself the even month to recover. And my autistic side really liked that. It was like black and white thinking, and it was like, yes, even months, you don't do anything. How long did that last? Like maybe 2 months. And then all of a sudden a TEDx opportunity comes my way, and that's in an even numbered month, and I was like, well, I can't say no to that. And then it throws my whole year off and everything just spirals after that. And I think you want to create this container for your ADHD parts to give it enough room to be creative, to have those dreams, but trying to rein it in to the point where it's not running the show. And it's really hard. I mean, it's really challenging.
So, so hard. I'm even thinking about this from the standpoint of how I move my body, which is one of the ways that I like to regulate, right? The ADHD side of me gets so excited about dancing that I don't even, like this is so silly. This past Sunday, in the midst of all this burnout, I was like, yeah, I just need to like move through, I just need to dance. I was like, let me just do a split. You haven't done a split in 2 years. What are you doing? Did it hurt the pop, right? Little injury. And it's that exactly.
Yeah.
On the cognitive level of you get too excited. You think you can do all the things. You're impulsive about it. It feels right. You just go for it. And then you end up injured or hurt or having to backtrack and reset how you do things. And so it's like this constant, not even like 2 steps forward, 1 step back. It's like you're sprinting in one direction and then you hit a wall and then you have to very slowly get yourself back up, actually check yourself out, dust yourself off, and then figure out how to get around the wall or get over the wall. And you have all this energy because you've been stopped and then you've actually had a little bit of time to rest, not even recover, but a little bit of time to rest. And then it kind of starts all over again. You blast through the wall and then there's another one.
That's actually really good imagery for those of you listening and not watching the video. And honestly, like that's so real. And I thought about this, like when I came home from Spain sick, right after that retreat, I'm like, I'm going to get into nature more. So we live in Blue Ridge Parkway. I'm going to drive up there and go hiking a couple of times and really get out and get off my phone, disconnect. I push myself too hard because I haven't gone hiking in like a year. I come back after like a day of that and my knees are all swollen. I sprain my ankle and then I have to pay the price. And then your body feels like it's betraying you, but your mind is still very, very active. And the one thing I've always struggled with, and I think it sounds like you can relate, is the ADHD side, the restlessness, that internal restlessness of feeling intellectually understimulated, where it's like, I need something, right? Like something has to be going on, but your body is like, I often have this image, and I've talked to Megan about this on the other podcast, of like, if my brain was just a brain in like one of those like mechanical robotic spaces, and then my body just wasn't around anymore because like my body betrays me all the time. And she said something so beautiful on Divergent Conversations one day, which was that the soul yearns for connection, but the body yearns for isolation. And I will never forget those words because I resonate with that so, so, so fucking much.
Yeah, I'm letting that land. I got chills at that because it feels very true in a number of ways. And then there is also that connection from that, how do I want to say this? Like when I think of dance or being around other bodies, and sometimes the autistic side of me is like, I hate people. I can't do this. And it's that being perceived bit, I think, is part of it. But that's also the yearning for connection to me too, right?
For sure.
And that wearing the mask feels so safe in some ways. And also, I think, helps me feel like I have more capacity than I actually do when the mask is masking very well.
100%. And the mask
drops. And it's like, oh, yeah, wait, there's no capacity here. But that also feels like it can sever connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that language.
And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors.
Hey everyone, this is Patrick from All Things Private Practice. I am inviting you to our third annual Doubt Yourself, Do It Anyway Summit. And guess what? This year it is in the United States, in beautiful Portland, Maine, not Oregon. I know there's a lot of confusion around that. Portland, Maine is a beautiful coastal city in the Atlantic Ocean. It's a harbor city. There's a lot of history there. It's very funky, very creative, very safe, walkable, lots of diversity. Very progressive city in the middle of Maine. It reminds me a lot of Asheville, North Carolina, where I live. A lot of cool small businesses. And that's exactly why we wanted to have it there. It's going to be September 1st to the 3rd. And you are going to get 9 MBCC CEs. We have ASWB pending. We'll make an announcement when that's finalized. 13 prolific industry leaders. Really about doing things differently. The summit has always been about showing you that our skills are applicable in so many different ways and to motivate you to think bigger, to grow in this profession, to take more risks, to work through that self-doubt, and to really embrace the doubt yourself, do it anyway mentality. We're going to be talking about how to rewire your trauma histories so that they don't show up in your businesses. We're going to talk about neurodiversity affirming panels. We're going to have workshops on alternative income streams. We have so much involved in this event. So make sure to sign up. Spots are limited September 1st to the 3rd in, again, beautiful Portland, Maine. And the link is in the show notes on my website and everywhere else that you follow my stuff. Doubt yourself, do it anyway, and I will see you in Maine.
I think as humans, you know, we're striving and yearning for that connection and to feel like we want to be a part of. And I think as autistic people, we often feel like we are not a part of, like we don't get it. We don't belong. We don't understand the rules socially or societally. And we feel very isolated in that. And I think that the ADHD side sometimes helps us feel more social and connect more because it yearns for that dopamine and it yearns for that sensory seeking sometimes in that way. And I think it is that balance because, you know, my social motivation is quite high. My social capacity is quite low. And those things are at war with one another. Of like, I feel like I want connection. I want to be around people that I care about. But then I get so exhausted so easily. And it's like this constant reminder of having to create checks and balances to support your body and the ability to just rest. And I just find that to be so unbelievably challenging.
How has your capacity shifted over the years as these discoveries have been happening?
It's a great question. I told my wife and I've told some close friends that since I learned that I was autistic, which would have been back in 2021, I feel as I've unmasked more and more and more that my capacity and abilities have exponentially shrunken. I feel like I am more impacted now and more disabled now than I have ever been in my life. And I know so many people who have discovered later in life that feel like I've found this discovery. I finally figured out the why. Why is everything so much harder now? And I think when you unmask and you start to have this awareness of how impacted you are and all of the ways that you've figured out how to belong and fit in, which are not genuine or authentic to you. And then you start to get impacted sensory-wise by everything and anything. It's just so exhausting. I hardly leave my house. Like, I think people think that I have this like really glamorous life based on social media, you know, of like, he's in this country, he's doing this thing, he's creating this. And I'm like, y'all, 95% of my existence is spent on my couch or in this office that I'm in right now. Like, I don't leave my house. And it's hard. It's gotten really hard. What about you? Did you discover ADHD later in life? Or yeah, okay.
Yeah, so much of what you just said is like, did you just take that right out of my yeah, I discovered, and I also love that word. I love the word discover. That feels really spacious and just good for my system. Yeah, I discovered in 2020, and it was actually the ADHD first that I became aware of. And it's so funny once you start piecing things together, and this is where I think the integration piece kind of comes in, because I think we're junkies for insight. I know that I am, right? I'm like
100%.
It's that the ADHD just like wanting to know more and wanting to know more and more and more. And then I think my special interest is also people, which is why it makes sense. I do what I do. Yeah. But yeah, I discovered the ADHD first, and then it was like, well, some bits of this aren't fully clicking. There's something else missing here. And then I actually came across the list of highly sensitive, you know, assigned female at birth, or for women, something like that. This laundry list of things. And I was like, whoa, all of this is really checking out a little too much. And then starting to look back on my life and then learning about giftedness as a falls under the umbrella of neurodivergence, and then 2E, like twice exceptional. And so my brain just basically exploded, and I was like, so many things make sense. But that was not enough, right? The insight is only a piece of it. And then the difficulty is integrating that and having that embodied shift of like, hey, this is what this looks like for you. You have been masking, you've been socialized to mask. And then I think it's actually been made even worse or more prevalent because I'm adopted and my parents are Caucasian, right? So my whole life has been this not having control over being perceived.
Yeah.
That's one of the difficulties of being neurodivergent and already feeling like you don't fit. So it makes sense. I kind of flew under the radar for so long.
And you have these like degrees of separation, right? So you're like, if you're this Black assigned female at birth, adopted by Caucasian parents, having to mask, code switch, adapt to being in certain rooms. My wife is a Black woman. She works for the government. I always see, like, I always see government Ariel. I see Ariel at home. I see Ariel with friends. I see Ariel with family, and having to like move through those different environments and be different people. And I can't imagine how much extra energy goes into that, because I have so much privilege, right? To be like, I can basically act however the fuck I want to act in most situations, or say whatever I want to say in most situations without often thinking about consequence. And that was really interesting to me post-discovery to start examining. But like what you're saying makes so much sense. And then having to try to integrate those parts, and you're constantly seeking that why, right? Like, I think a lot of us ADHDers are seeking information, trying to make sense of things all the time. And when your reality doesn't make sense, or your existence doesn't make sense to you, and you get misdiagnosis and you get misdiagnosis and you get this and you get told that this is why you're acting the way you're acting, or perceiving the way you're perceiving, or experiencing the way you're experiencing, but yet none of that makes sense to you. It doesn't land. And then you finally figure it out later in life, and you're like trying to make sense of your entire existence now through a different lens, trying to move forward through this newfound lens. It almost becomes consuming. It almost becomes like, everything I see now is through the autistic ADHD lens, and I can't unsee it. And that's really hard too.
Mm-hmm. It's both hard and such a relief.
Yes.
I think the what feels most difficult about it is when you do discover something about yourself and everything is starting to make more sense, and then you're sharing that with people and their understanding of you, like their mask slips a little bit, or they just show a little bit too much about how they feel, their ableism or internalized ableism. And then the question of like, well, not everything can be about the ADHD, right? Like that can't be the answer to everything and why you show up the way that you do. And I'm like, it is to me. That's how I'm viewing it, because it's all making a lot more sense. And I really appreciate labels. And it's so interesting. I know some people really hate labels and they feel really confined by them. And for me, there's such a sense of safety in that, of knowing where to look, where to be, where to show up, who I can go to. And it's not going to be perfect science every time, but
no.
Yeah. That constant.
I think that's true. And it's that grief relief paradox in a way that's always talk about, you know, is like, grief of former self, what could have been different? Relief to finally understand yourself. Relief to finally put language to experience. Unbelievably powerful. So I want to pivot a little bit. We both host retreats. We both host retreats for neurodivergent humans. I actually have a neurodivergent entrepreneur retreat happening in New Zealand this March. I'm excited because I get to nerd the fuck out on all the Lord of the Rings stuff. I'm actually doing a vow renewal at Hobbiton with my wife, and I am so pumped for that. I'm going to diverge a bit because I'm excited, but like, I saw the video of Elijah Wood crashing someone's wedding at Hobbiton, and I said to her, like, would you ever do a vow renewal there? And she's like, yeah, sure, I guess so. I don't care. She's not a fan at all. And I was just like, okay. And I messaged them at Hobbiton, and I was like, hey, I'm going to be here for this very small window that I can get to the North Island, get to Hobbiton. Is there an option? And they were like, yeah, we can do it that day at this time. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is probably meant to be then. So my co-host Gabrielle and I and her husband Mike and my wife are all going to drive, and I'm going to get to be really nerdy and special interest filled before the retreat starts. So I'm pumped for that. Okay. Anyway, back on track. So we both host these events. I saw your post in my Facebook group about the event that you're hosting in Ireland. And I have notoriously said this publicly to my friend group on this podcast that I would never go to anyone else's retreats. And it wasn't because you mentioned off air that I think someone's going to do a bad job. Socially, I don't know my role. And I noticed throughout my life, I always have to have a role in social situations, because it takes pressure off of socializing. It takes pressure off of that awkwardness that I've always felt. Even at high school parties, I'd be like the one hosting the party, cleaning up, doing things behind the scenes. I need to be active. So I was always fearful of like, what does that mean for me if I go to someone else's event? I also feel weirdly sometimes like people have a lot of access to me because of podcasts, social media, et cetera, and that people view me more as like a source of information or whatever. And that feels weird to me. And I never know how to be perceived or received. Anyway, you posted something that just really resonated with me. And then I saw that it was in Ireland, one of my favorite places on earth. I've actually done 4 retreats there. I've been 10 times, have Irish heritage. And I was like, ooh, this might be something that I actually need to sign up for. And then I sent your link to my friend group and to my wife, and they were all like, yeah, sign up for that. That sounds like exactly what you need. So I just want to say thank you for that, because I will be attending in May or in the end of April, and I am both nervous and excited, but I think it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you'll be joining us and that you'll have the chance to figure out what it means to be a participant and be taken care of. Yeah. Because you do so much. The being worried about someone else doing a good job, that's my language of responsibility. That's what I'm worried about at other people's retreats. And a lot of that for me comes from not knowing that I was neurodivergent, and then being in all of these spaces seeking that connection, and then being woefully failed by myself, right, for not knowing, and then by some of the people that were hosting.
Yeah.
had great marketing,
right?
But couldn't really back it up. And so
I think
that's a perpetual thing that kind of comes up for me. This was really important and scary to put out. This is the first time I'm doing a retreat with the language in the title, Neurodivergent by Nature, right?
Yeah.
And it's because I want people that do hold the title, feel good about the labels, right, to have a space for themselves. And also for me too. I know a lot of the retreat creation that I've done so far has been like, what do I need? What do I want?
Totally.
And it's that space where I'm not being told what to do. Everything is an option, but I have a lot of different things I can do. A lot of different options to play around and either be seen if I want to be, or be hidden if that's what feels good to me, come in and out and not feel like you have to participate. It's just like, feels icky.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I totally love that. And I resonate a lot. And I always say this at the beginning of my events of like, listen, if you want to participate, feel no pressure. You don't even have to show your face. Please don't make eye contact. Go stim, use your fidget toys. You're going to see me step away when I'm overwhelmed. It's okay for you to step away. Language matters, and how we model our behavior matters. I have removed myself from so many experiences over the years at events. I used to feel really guilty. And now I just am like, I have to model that it's okay to take care of yourself. And when I'm feeling really overwhelmed, I just send a message to the group of like, I am having one of those times and I'm not going to come to dinner, or I'm not going to come to whatever. I'm just going to rest in the darkness and I will see you all tomorrow. Because if I don't do this and I mask and push through, tomorrow's version of me is not going to be one that is like able to share this experience or be the host or be the leader. And I think it helps to model that. So I really respect that what you're doing. Do you want to talk about why you created this event or what it's going to entail? Because I think it seems like it's going to be really special.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for saying all that too. It's something I'm still working with in my own head. The last retreat I did was in Portugal, and it was that ADHD autistic push and pull, like staying up until 2 because people are around the fire and having fun, chatting and gabbing. And I'm like, I want to be a part of it. And then it's like, hey, bestie, you have to wake up and teach yoga in the morning, go to sleep. Yeah. Perpetual, less than 5 hours of sleep the whole retreat.
Yeah.
So, it felt so good. And then getting to the end and it's like, there's that burnout. Separate of that, the reason I created this is just because I want people to come together in spaces. I want neurodivergent folks to come together in spaces and be perceived as their unmasked selves and just feel that acceptance, whatever that might look like, and the mirroring that can come from that, the depth that is present when we all come together. And it's just like one person over here is stimming and another person over here is like doodling, and then right, and everyone's getting what they need out of the space in a way that it doesn't look like maybe in a classroom setting. People are getting what they are supposed to. I hope that makes sense. A little bit wordy there, but.
No, it makes perfect sense. I think that's what I envision when we have neuroaffirming events is like, we have to think about like the way the space is organized. Do we have enough room for people to move around? I don't want to be sitting for like hours at a time, trying to think about the things that I need and prefer and the things that I don't like at all. And I think that's an interesting evolution throughout the events that I've been hosting. And I love that you're doing it in Ireland, in like the Wicklow, Glendalough area. I don't know if it sounds like you've probably been there before, but it's amazing. I mean, you're talking about nature. We're talking about the woods. We're talking about lakes. We're talking about like beautiful Irish countryside. And for me, there's nothing more sensory soothing than Ireland. And I always feel such a difference when my feet touch down there, and I've started to do more ancestral work and I'm thinking about like some past life stuff. And I just know that there's an energy there for me that feels really calming. And the same is true of New Zealand. Like
When I was in New Zealand in April, I told my dad this because he was with me. It was the first time I've ever not experienced 24/7, 365 anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it was. I think it was a combo of the culture, the slowness, the nature, the beauty. I was also 18 hours ahead of people on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have to answer my phone ever. I would wake up. They'd be halfway through their day. I'd check on my wife. I'd check on some friends. By the time I was eating lunch, they were going to bed. And I was like, I don't even have to, I can just be present and exist. Mm-hmm. For me, that was really powerful and really, really necessary.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. It's bringing me back. I just got back from Costa Rica a few weeks ago. And that was like my fifth time being there. And this experience, I was there for a training that ended up being so much more than that, like a spiritual awakening in a number of ways, but a very similar feeling of like, whoa, this is the most grounded my body has ever been in my life. I didn't even know this was possible.
Exactly.
It's like you can't unlearn that once your body experiences it, which I think is a really important part about retreats and what I really appreciate about them in this world. And yeah, I think what I'm really excited for with this experience in Ireland is that I'm taking a lot of the pressure off of myself to be leading a lot of the things. I really want people to be able to come together and just for us to have chats. If that's what we want to do with how different people are coping and different ways that people are getting through and not necessarily masking, although I'm sure that will come up, but actually taking the mask off and leaning into their neurodivergence in ways that feel really affirming. Cause I think we can all learn from one another and be like, oh, that wouldn't work for me. And ooh, I've never tried that before. I want to try that. And then adding in some fun things of like, we'll have some night hikes. We'll have some day hikes if we want to, gentle movement. And then some different classes. Like one of the ones I'm really, really excited for, I don't want to give too much away, but we're going to be doing kind of like a foraging class where we're just going to learn a lot about the land there and eating the food directly from the land too. So lots of grounding in that way. And I'm so excited for what it's going to be and what it already is. I love this idea that the facilitator at this training I was in Costa Rica, so it was for brain spotting, and it was with Maria Javid Payne, incredible, incredible human. Highly recommend checking her out. She talks about how when she's creating her events, her retreats, or her intensives, she very consciously thinks about all the people that are meant to be there, and she calls them in. And I felt that every single person that was there was meant to be there and brought something really special. And so that's what I'm also trying to cultivate here. Is like even my co-facilitator, Michelle, she's an incredible human being. And we actually met during our psilocybin training, and it just felt, it was immediate. It was that immediate, like, I think I had a fidget or something like that. Now that's one of the things that I do is I bring like 2 or 3 fidgets on me at all times. And anytime I go anywhere, I pull it out. And then whoever's like, what is that? I'm like, let's chat. So it was one of those. And I gave her one of my fidgets and we kind of sat next to each other, and then ADHD was just like pinging back and forth immediately. And so that's what we're hoping to create with this. It's like people coming from all over, knowing that they're meant to be here in this space, kind of like you found it and you're like, oh, this is it. Kind of goes against what I thought I was going to do, but it just feels right. That's what we're trying to cultivate. So yeah, it's going to be a really special experience.
Love that. Yeah, I'm excited for it. And congrats on creating it and just doing that work. So as we get ready to wrap, why don't you tell everyone where they can find what you're offering? And we will link it in the show notes as well. I believe Etseta has a code for you if you do decide you want to come to Ireland, and looking forward to it very much.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Etseta Scarseth, just my name. And then same thing with Facebook. And then my website is unearthingchoicecounseling.com or unearthingchoice.com. And then if you want to hear more about Ireland specifically, it's just /Ireland.
I love it. We'll have that in the show notes so you have access to everything that you just listed. Looking forward to the experience. And thank you so much for coming on and making the time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. So excited to see you in Ireland. It'll be great.
And to everyone listening to the All Things Private Practice podcast, new episodes are out on Saturdays on all major platforms like download, subscribe, share, doubt yourself, do it anyway. I'll see you next week.